individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. This is Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting in for David Pruse. You're listening to KFAR Problem Corner. And today in the studio, we have live Mr. Cleworth, Jerry Cleworth.
Oh, good morning. Good, thank you.
Okay. Well, Jerry, I think today we're probably going to talk about, well, we'll see where the conversation leads us, but maybe mostly give us a nice update on what's going on over at City Hall in the City Council chambers from that perspective. And before we get into that, why don't we just, I know most of the audience probably knows you around Fairbanks North Pole, but could you tell us a bit about yourself? You know, how long have you been here? What do you do? How long have you been on the council? These sorts of things.
Well, I've been in Alaska for 71 years. Came here when I was all of 3 months old. I don't remember much about that. And then we lived in Palmer a bit, Juneau, and then finally came to Fairbanks in 59. Where my dad became the pastor at the First Presbyterian Church a few blocks away from us right now, and lived here ever since. I went to school here, graduated from the university in 75, along with my wife the same year, and worked in accounting for 10 years from 1970 to 79, although I didn't love it much. It was the greatest training experience I ever had. It set you up for owning your own business or starting your own business and learning from the mistakes of the clients that we had in the 70s. I remember some of the small businesses that failed. And the failure rate for most small business is staggering, as you know. It's in the, after 2 or 3 years, over 90% of them usually fail. I tried to avoid that and started my own business back then and have been doing that ever since.
Yeah, I was going to say from memory, because I went to business school where they try to teach you all those facts and figures, right? I think they, I want to say they were teaching 90% are gone within 5 years, but maybe it's 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. It's staggering.
It doesn't make a difference to the decision-making. It's the concept, you know.
Yeah, and at first, you know, very, very conservative at what I would do and made some real stupid mistakes financially, but I didn't have a lot of money back then, so I couldn't make big mistakes. But as years went by, the business has really grown. And if you can make your hobby a profession, life is very good.
So, okay, I just wanted to make sure I heard you right. So you said you started in accounting. What business did you say you started with?
I worked for Howard Koons, a name you don't hear of many anymore. He was one of the last territorial accountants that had a license. Back then, they did things a little different. And he sold the business to my father, and I worked for him for a few years until one Monday morning I said, I really don't want to do this anymore. So I decided to strike out on my own.
And that was real accounting, or was that more on the bookkeeping side, or what?
It was real heavy on tax accounting, doing tax returns. Other people in the office did more of the month-to-month accounting for businesses in the area or payrolls, that sort of thing. But I pretty much stuck with tax accounting.
Okay, you stuck with tax accounting. So I hope that means that you're not paying a lot of taxes or any more than you need to be every year.
Well, we pay our fair share, that's for sure. Being self-employed, you know, our government in its infinite wisdom decreed Social Security on everyone except for itself. And they get civil service, or you can join into state or municipal retirement systems. But the rest of us have to pay Social Security, and we get hit with the, we call it the double whammy. You have to pay both the employee and the employee share of that tax. And that's probably the main owl each year on top of the federal tax that you have to pay in any profit.
Well, Jerry, you know that there's a way out of the double hit of FICA taxes.
What's that?
Oh, do you not know? You're going to be wishing you had known this years before. Well, if you legally form your business as an LLC, that doesn't in of itself do anything. But you can go apply to the IRS and ask them to treat you as if you were an S corp. And then if you're an S corp, what you do is you pay yourself the fairest payroll you could imagine. So basically, you estimate how much you'd have to hire someone to do the job you're doing when you're actually working for the business. You pay yourself that W-2, and then anything else you take out of the business after that, you classify as a dividend, and that dividend doesn't get hit with the FICA taxes. It just gets hit with your regular income taxes.
Yeah, I didn't want to form a sub-S. We decided to do a partnership instead and not do payrolls or anything like that, just do simple draws. I love simplicity, but I know what you're saying.
It is easier. And actually, I need to make a disclaimer here for a second. I meant to make it the beginning of the program. That's just because I happen to serve on the Borough Assembly. So when I guest host in 2 months, I won't have to make this disclaimer anymore because I'll be free, you know. But I am on the Borough Assembly, and I just want everyone to know that anything I say is my opinion, and it's not meant to represent that of the Assembly and may or may not be that of the Assembly. It might have an opinion, might not, you know, just mm-hmm. But we're supposed to say that for our ethics code there with the Assembly, so I just wanted to get that on the record. But at any rate, I know a little bit, I know enough to be dangerous, not really enough to know what I'm talking about when it comes to this tax stuff, because I've started two businesses. My first one, as you mentioned, right, a lot of businesses aren't successful. I was very good for my clients. I was a realtor, but in the end, I wasn't successful for myself. So that one went down in under 5 years. Mm-hmm. I think it made it like 3.5 years.
You're a statistic.
But my second one is doing well. I'm in the visitor industry, and I think I'm starting on year 7. So, but when I started that, I did start as a sole prop, which is almost the same as, you know, partnership, right? It's just one instead of two. And then I went ahead and changed it over to an LLC after I had my first good year and I started that double side FICA taxes. I was like, whoa, this is a lot of money. What can I do about it? And so I did find a way to do something mm-hmm. about it. But anyway, you've been paying that the whole time. So
that's correct.
But you know what? You pay that the whole time, and you're going to have a much larger Social Security check waiting for you when you qualify for that. That's
well, I definitely qualify. I'm 71. So, yeah, I decided to take SS at age 66, where you're not penalized for working. I had no intentions of quitting. So you get a little bit, yeah. It's not like the state retirement, but it's fine.
Yeah, well, I could get into Social Security, but I'm not going to. We're going to stick to your stuff. So we've got about a minute and a half before the break, Jerry. What's the most interesting thing that you think is coming up or important thing to the city right now? And when it comes to the city council and decisions it may need to make or think about?
In the very near future, we're going to be starting budget work because we're on a calendar year, unlike you folks at the borough. And we started this year with about $1.5 million of new revenue because the voters were generous enough to modify the charter a bit with the tax cap. That gave us a windfall. My disappointment is that we have pretty much rolled through that. I sometimes chuckle when I say one of the most dangerous things you can do with government is give it a lot of money very quickly, and then you see what you do with it. So I'm somewhat disappointed in that, and I remember one night after a meeting, I told the mayor, good luck with the budget, because I think they're going to have difficulties coming up and some tough decisions. It was easy last year. It's easy when you have money. But we've gone through it rather rapidly, which is a bit alarming to me.
Okay. Well, we're about to go to a break here, Jerry. But for those who are listening, and you're prepared to take phone calls, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, for those who may want to call in later in the program, it's going to be 458-8225. That's 458-TALK. And with that, we are going to our first break.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Aches and pains keeping you down? McKinley Orthopedic and Sports Medicine has the only certified primary care sports medicine physician in Fairbanks. Dr. Malcolm offers a variety of treatments to include ultrasound-guided injections, platelet-rich plasma or PRP injections, and stem cell therapies. These regenerative medicine techniques are cutting-edge and can help your body heal itself. Dr. Malcolm can perform these procedures in office without the need for surgery. Don't let pain get you down. Jump back into life with McKinley Orthopedic and Sports Medicine. Call 456-3338 today.
The team at Denali Industrial Supply would like to say thank you for joining them on their demo days this summer. And in case you missed the big savings from these events, they're offering September specials on Milwaukee, Makita, and DeWalt tools, batteries, and accessories. Whether you're a professional in the industry or a DIY enthusiast, the September specials at Denali Industrial Supply can help you expand your existing toolkit. Don't miss your chance to save on top-tier tools from Denali Industrial Supply all through the month of September. Denali Industrial Supply on Van Horn Road. Just look for the big red roof.
Nowadays, nothing is more important than saving money. And the best way to do that is with the radio station's 50-50 Friday offer. Every week, a different special from a different local business, offering gift certificates at half price. All from your favorite restaurants, shops, and events. So what's this week's 50-50 Friday offer?
This week's 50-50 deal is the all-new Fairbanks Laundry, your brand-new state-of-the-art laundromat. Now open daily 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. at 906 Old Steese Highway, boasting a massive 6,000 square foot self-service laundry facility with a variety of washers and dryers to suit every load size. Your laundry will be ready in no time. This week, get a $50 user card from Fairbanks Laundry for half price. Fairbanks Laundry, where clean clothes are just a spin cycle away.
Just log on to this station's website and click on that red 50-50 tag in the upper right-hand corner. Have your credit card ready and get ready to save big. 50-50 Friday, every Friday at 9 a.m. from the radio station.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy today with scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 50. Southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected. Tonight, chance for scattered rain showers. Lows around 39. Chance for scattered rain showers again. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 49. Cloudy skies. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Welcome back, Fairbanks and North Pole. This is Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting for David Pruse. Jerry Cleworth is with us in the studio today. Jerry, we were just talking about city council business.
Yes.
I forget exactly what we were talking about.
And the budget
about.
Coming up.
Right, the budget. You have more. Otherwise, I've actually got something that I'd like to ask you about.
No, that's going to be the big issue in the future. We wrestled with some problems earlier this year with the police department, where we have been losing more people than we've been gaining and trying to come up with solutions to that problem. I wasn't real happy with the solutions we came up with. I thought we could have structured a lot of things better. A little smarter, but that is done. And essentially what happened there is a two-pronged approach. They decided to supplement the retirement package with a $10,000 supplemental that would be put away for the employee each year, but they cannot draw down on that until, I forget how many years out.
Or a longer vesting period.
Yeah, it's a vesting period. And the idea being, of course, please hang around so you can get this big pot of money at the end. And it makes sense. You know, I've seen other corporations and people do that also. That would increase the package. When you look at the total compensation package, almost exactly 10% for most officers, some more, some less, depending on what their base salary is.
What's 10%, the retirement?
The whole package. Yeah, that retirement piece, the $10,000. But on top of that, they did a $4 an hour increase. Now, mind you, the collective bargaining agreement isn't even up until next year. But they went ahead and opened it up early to make that change. And when you add that in, it's almost exactly another 10%. So it's about a 20% bump. Now, on top of that, there is a signing bonus for a new hire of $60,000, which is way higher than the other police departments in the state. And they're not real happy with it.
Can you say that dollar amount again?
$60,000 signing bonus.
Do they need to complete like a successful year or 2 years of service before they unlock that bonus, or do they just get it?
There is a catch along those lines, yeah. If they quit early, then it's going to be prorated. but I forget how many years they have to be on before they're out of that situation, 2 or 3 years, something like that. But the whole package then came to about 20%. And the whole...
So here's the big question.
Yeah. Okay?
So when and we've struggled with some of these sorts of ideas at the borough, and when you do something like the sign-on bonus, if that works and you get the department full, you can repeal it. You can make it go away. You
know, right.
You use it while you need it, then you can just get rid of it. Same thing with if you're doing a... It sounds like this is like a one-time extra, almost like sign-on bonus into the retirement program, right? The long vesting.
That's not a bonus. No, the bonus is separate from the retirement plan. The retirement plan is actually outside the CBA, so it could go away unilaterally by the council. The $4 an hour is negotiated. That is a part of the contract. Now,
right.
The bonus is outside the contract.
So what I'm getting at is the extra retirement money, the bonus, those can be put in to attract employees, and then when they come in and you like the HR situation is stabilized, you can make them go away, like a temporary incentive, basically.
Yeah.
But the $4 an hour, you put that in, I imagine that's going to be considerably more sticky, maybe almost impossible to get rid of.
Well, that's a part of the contract now. Yeah, you're not going to go into negotiations the next year and say, well, we'd like to get rid of that now.
So here's the
that's
question.
Not happening.
Does the city council and the city government, does it have enough money to fund these sustainably, or at least the $4 an hour? And what's the cost?
Yeah. This is
monetary and then to potentially starving money out of other departments.
This is my problem up front. The idea was that reducing the department, the employees from a 42 to a 37 personnel staffing, that you save a lot of money because of unpaid wages. True. The concept was that the $10,000 would be covered by those positions not being there, so it wouldn't have an effect on the general fund. True. When you went to the $4 an hour, all of a sudden things change. It totally exceeded the savings from those six positions that are no longer there, and now you're going to have a drain on the general fund. And that's what I brought up to council. The CFO and I were concerned about that, chief financial officer, and wanted to make it very clear that the original premise was to just simply use funds that were never spent, departmental funds that were not spent because you have empty positions. Now you've not only exhausted that source, you're spending next year's funds too.
So that'll cause a big problem, especially if the department ends up getting fully staffed in terms of how your numbers are going to pencil out. But if you still remain understaffed, you could have a lapse. But that's kind of that's a dangerous game to play, to hope that you have a large enough lapse to fund next year's budget.
That's right. I mean, if you don't have 37 people, then obviously if you have budgeted for it, you'll have some savings if those positions are not filled. But if all 37 are there, then you're going to have a problem. And that was a concern that we had voiced to them. Then also the bonus would go away at that point, because the bonus was supposed to be funded only by vacant positions. If they're full, it goes away.
Okay. Yeah, I had to struggle with a lot of these same questions at the borough level, and I did two things that are somewhat similar, and feel free to comment. But the first was borough-wide. It definitely appeared as if, and perhaps it's true to a certain extent today, but I think it's starting to get better. We had maybe a morale problem at the borough, and I don't know if the city did too, just broadly, like kind of when the worst bits of COVID were kind of after that, and people are just kind of dragging through and pushing through. And so we had some unspent of our COVID money, which, by the way, the city did a better job than the borough did. I don't know how you did it. You guys turned that stuff around in like months. We took more like years to deal with it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that analysis.
I actually still don't understand what it is that you did, what was different about your code, what was different about your council versus our assembly, but you guys were just efficient.
We have a CFO, Margarita Bell, who used to work with grants at the city and very good at it. And so when these funds came in during the COVID years, they read the fine print. They know how it works, what they can do, what they cannot do. And we got the money out the door very, very rapidly. I know the borough was behind. I'm not sure exactly why on that. But, kudos to the accounting department at the city. They do a great job.
Yeah. Well, so we had a bit extra. And so I figured, and there were some departments that were woefully understaffed. And I was really looking at our finance and our legal Mm-hmm. And at one point, our legal went down to one out of five employees, basically, that we wanted to have working in person. It ended up being one in a kind of part-time teleconferencing person. And it's coming back now. It's getting better. But I figured it was just like you were talking about. Well, why don't we do some sort of sign-on bonus? You know, that way it's just temporary. We could use COVID money for it, that sort of thing. And I thought also, why don't we incentivize employees to go out and recruit? Like a headhunter mm-hmm. bonus. It's like, hey, you go and refer someone to apply. They apply successfully. They get the job, and they hold that job for 12 months, and now you get $1,000, $2,000, whatever right. bonus as the employee for helping the organization.
Yeah, we do that in the police department as well.
Well, do you know what happened with those ideas?
You lost them?
They went into the sausage maker of politics. And they sort of came out the other end, but they didn't really look like what they started with. So our borough mayor had a say, and a few assembly members had their say. So I don't remember if the headhunter bonus stayed in at all. If it did, it got reduced dramatically. I think it stayed maybe, and it got reduced quite a lot. And then what happened was all the employees just got a bonus for being active employees. Which I wasn't, I didn't think that was a bad idea, but that wasn't, like, the main thing was to incentivize new people to come work.
Yeah.
And so it changed quite a bit, and that's what happened to the last piece of our COVID money that we kind of actively were steering where to go, if I recall correctly. But you guys did great. And what role did you play in getting that COVID money up quickly?
Actually, very little. Like I say, finance took the bull by the horn. They got the applications out on the street rapidly. They had a committee put together that had some good people on it. They went through those things quickly and, you know, allocated the funds. There was a glitch in it where one of the firms wanted to get more and came back later. And
More than they should have gotten or what?
Well, extra money was on the table, and if I remember right, and they were going to divvy that up, but the CFO had some problems with what was happening, the special requests going directly to council and not going through committee. And in the end, that was when Mayor Matherly was still there. He ended up vetoing a specific allocation to one group coming straight to the council rather than going through process. So that was the only glitch that I saw in the whole thing.
Okay, well, we got about a minute, so we're going to go on a break here. But when we come back, I'd like to ask you some questions about the city's permanent fund.
Okay.
And indeed, I asked some questions last night at the ITA forum, and I'll wait till after the break to repeat what those are. But yes, I think we could have a very good discussion about that. Very interesting. I like looking at the markets myself. I know that you have that accounting background, and I imagine that has helped you quite a lot when it comes to looking at government budgets and just having a accelerated learning curve of figuring out how things connect and where money's flowing and that sort of thing.
Right. Sure, it definitely has helped.
Do you have any specific thought that you can share in 10 seconds here while we're waiting for the break?
No, it'll be fun talking about the permanent fund because I was there at the time when we set that up into our city charter, which is unlike the borough, which doesn't have a charter.
Okay. Well, yes, that is a big difference. And you're also first class with full police.
Yep.
And
road powers.
And I'm just listening. We should be having a break starting here shortly. And so this is a kind of a funny story for everyone listening. I've guest hosted a few times here. This is the first time they've released me into the wild. I'm running the soundboard all by myself. So we're waiting for the music to start on here.
And he's not panicking yet.
There it is. Well, you're listening to KFAR Problem Corner with Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting for David Cruz. We will be right back after this break.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
A North poll found 77% of Americans believe President Biden is too old to effectively serve another 4 years in office. The president would be 86 at the end of a potential second term. Republican presidential candidate, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie on the Fox Business Network says it's not just the current president who's getting up there in age.
We have two leading contenders in each party who are both too old. 78 is too old, too, for Donald Trump. We don't need two candidates who are going to be 160 years old running next November.
Well, that Republican frontrunner Donald Trump's facing felony counts across multiple jurisdictions. Through the Associated Press, Vice President Kamala Harris weighed in.
I believe that people should be held accountable under the law. And when they break the law, there should be accountability. And I support it when it happens.
91 total felony counts. The former president has pled not guilty. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports an Esther man was arrested Tuesday for reportedly shooting his roommate in the ear following an argument. Alaska State Troopers responded to a Gold Hill Road home early Tuesday morning after a report that 53-year-old Gregory Shane McGuire had shot a man in the back of the head. McGuire and the man had been roommates. McGuire had been evicted from the home in August and was still staying at the residence, according to court documents. The man was cleaning the home when McGuire returned and attempted to enter the house, but the man would not allow him to enter. The two men argued and the man went to his room after the argument. He told troopers he heard a loud gunshot and felt pain in the back of his neck. Troopers saw that there was a bullet hole in the man's ear and saw a bullet hole in the man's bedroom window. A neighbor told troopers she heard a loud gunshot, looked outside, and saw McGuire run from the house and get into the passenger side of a car. Troopers arrested McGuire near a Faith Lane home Tuesday morning and found a backpack with a revolver in it. McGuire was charged with felony first-degree assault and felony second-degree weapons misconduct.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Are you losing Medicaid? Avoid a gap in coverage. Connect with a local healthcare navigator to learn about your coverage options, including healthcare.gov. A navigator can help you find a plan that best fits your needs, check to see what cost savings you qualify for, and help you enroll. The help is free, confidential, and available in person, online, or by phone. Call 211 to connect with a local healthcare navigator today.
On the American frontier, families were often responsible for housing teachers, so students would bring teachers apples as a form of sustenance and a token of appreciation. These days, the best way to show appreciation for your child's teacher is to bring them a Giraldo's pizza. Bringing someone a pizza such as the Sizzlack, Sweet and Heat, or just a traditional pepperoni pizza from Giraldo's will let them know that you appreciate them. There are many people in your life that you appreciate, and there is a Giraldo's pizza for each one.
It's obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media are distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the real concerns of American families. Countries we're at odds with are hoarding food, financial systems are strained, and supply chains remain too fragile. We can tell something is coming, so we're preparing. Folks are getting into self-reliance and investing in emergency food storage. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. And while you're there, stock up on water filtration, heirloom seeds, and emergency gear, too, at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
You're listening to KFAR, 660 AM, Problem Corner. Guest hosting, Aaron Lojeski, myself, and we have as a regular guest in the studio, Mr. Cleworth, Jerry Cleworth. And so, Jerry, why don't you tell us a little bit about the City of Fairbanks Permanent Fund? And I know the state has something with a similar name, so why don't we start by saying, well, what is the City Permanent Fund, and how's that different than the state's?
Many people remember that we used to own the utility system, and about the mid-90s, we realized we had a very serious problem, and that was the deregulation of the telephone industry. We had a monopoly. It's always fun to have a monopoly, right? But with cellular coming in and licenses being sold and all that, we knew we would lose that monopoly. And not only that, the competition has rights to our infrastructure. And we saw the handwriting on the wall, but the telephone utility still was the one utility that had value. So it was put up for sale, very contentious election. The voters decided to sell the utilities.
Now, how did that vote go?
No, it was tight. It was like 49-51 or something like that. It was close. And the problem with it was that some people were upset that we were selling the water utility, and that was the real catalyst of the opposition. It wasn't so much the telephone utility or electricity or anything. It was the water part of it, component. In any case, we had been receiving a payment in lieu of taxes from the utility systems to the tune of about $3 million a year that went into the general fund. That was component of our budget every year.
Jerry, what did you say that was? $2 million? $3 million?
About $3 million, yeah.
That was a PILT?
Yep.
Okay, payment in lieu of taxes.
And we knew that we had to come up with an investment or this fund to make up for that loss. The original deposit into that permanent fund was about $78 million at the time. And it was never envisioned to inflation-proof it. It was simply done by a formula that the city could take out X amount of dollars, and I forget what it was back then. It's morphed many times since then. And that this was put into the city charter so that the principal of that the corpus of the fund could not be spent by any city council without the vote of the people. And it had to be a supermajority, 70% of the voters, to spend the corpus of the fund. Only thing that we could utilize were the earnings of the fund at the time. And again, I just forget all the little details back then, but it was very conservatively done. So never designed to be inflation-proof.
That actually sounds similar in a lot of ways to the state permanent fund. The big difference that I'm getting, like the state one has a corpus, which can't be spent unless it's constitutionally protected, so it could mm-hmm. be spent, but it's very difficult. So now we have a corpus for the city that is also very difficult to protected by the charter
right.
rather than a state constitution. And then in both cases, the earnings are available to the relevant legislative body to appropriate.
Yeah. Not too many years after that, the way we took out funds was changed, and it was done on a flat percentage of 4.5% of the fund can be spent each year. The 0.5 would go into what we call the city's capital fund. The 4% itself would go into the general fund. And as years have gone by and the fund has grown, that 4.5% has increased. Now, whether this fund makes 7 or 8% in a year or loses money in a year, you're still entitled to the 4.5. On average, as you know, because I know you've done some investigating, the city has been, maybe take it back to its inception, earning about 5.5%, 5.6% if you average it all out. And so people say, well, that's not enough to inflation-proof. I just keep having to remind them is that you can't, it was never set up to be inflation-proof. It was just to protect a percentage of that that budget each year that goes into the general fund, that there's a guarantee that we have it. When it first started, I do remember that you could only take money out if it made money. And so the finance office was pulling their hair out because each year when they prepared a budget, they go, well, we don't know if it's going to make money by the end of the year or not. If you could have a real downturn in the last 3 months. And so it made budgeting extremely difficult. And that's when it changed to the flat 4.5%.
So even then, because it's got this corpus that's protected, so if for some reason you had spent away all the accumulated earnings, you could, in theory, have a situation where your formula calls for a draw, but you actually can't draw because it would eat into the corpus because you ran out of accumulated earnings because you had enough down years in a row sort of thing, or flat years.
No, even if you had, let's say you had continual down years, you still can do 4.5, but as your corpus goes down, that 4.5, the amount you're taking out is going down as well. But there is no stipulation in there that you cannot take it out each year.
So that percentage of market draw is part of the charter. Is mm-hmm. that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it is a little different than the permanent fund in how the body can access the money because you're allowed to do the percentage of market draw no matter what. But the state
right.
permanent fund, if their earnings reserve runs out,
mm-hmm.
they can't do their draw anymore. because they cannot take out of the corpus at all legally unless they change the Constitution.
I mean, fortunately, that's not been the trend. I mean, obviously, as years have gone by, we've gone from 78 million up to about 140 million now. And we do put money into it also. People may not know that. When we sell any real property, our charter demands that those dollars go into the city's permanent fund. Recently, we had a little bit of surplus, and we just sent $250,000 over to the permanent fund. We didn't have to do that, but...
And when you appropriate additional money in, does that mm-hmm. get added to the corpus?
Yes.
Is all money in the
permanent
fund?
You could put it in. You can't take it out other than your formula.
Okay.
Yep.
So if the permanent fund makes $10 million in a year, those earnings, assuming they're realized, right? They're either dividends or capital gains that are realized.
Right.
They go to the corpus. They are now future councils can only take it out according to the percentage of market draw formula.
Right.
Okay.
And right now we're looking at becoming more aggressive. That fund was set up extremely conservative because of the fear of not getting the $3 million. We needed that money. So, and back then you had high interest rates, so it wasn't very hard to achieve it. But as years went by and interest rates went down to nothing, they were looking at different ways of trying to be a little more aggressive and not quite so conservative in investing. We've had long discussions. Right now we use Alaska Permanent Alaska Capital Management down in Anchorage. That is the company that oversees the fund. But the problems I've always had with the system that we have set up is we have parameters set out in code that you can invest, you know, so much in equities, so much in bonds, and so on and so forth. And as long as the company kind of, you know, invests along the guidelines that we set up, whether they make money or lose money at the end of the year, they can hide behind that and say, well, you know, we followed the parameters that the city has set up. I would almost like to have no parameters and say, no, we're just going to compare your performance with what Arctic Slope is doing with their huge permanent fund, State of Alaska and others like University of North Texas, some of the big ones outside that we see and compare with, and kind of put the pressure on them a little bit that we would like to see more of an active management. Because most of these management companies buy mutual funds within the brackets that you established. And, you know, they do okay in time, but you don't have somebody there going, man, I think GM is really undervalued. We ought to pick up GM stock. They don't buy individual stocks or sell individual stocks. They're doing funds. And I think the council is kind of has agreement. We're going to be meeting with our permanent fund committee to possibly look at changing some of that.
Well, you know, there's a couple of interesting interviews out there on YouTube from the late Jack Bogle. Are you familiar with him?
No.
He's the gentleman behind Vanguard. And his claim to fame is he brought index funds to the people. So, you know, I wasn't around, but back in the 60s, 70s, you know, if you wanted to buy the broader stock market, usually you'd do that through some sort of mutual fund. And my understanding is the expense fees were usually, you know, 1% of your investments. You had to pay to the managers every year to access that. So he came out with this S&P 500 index fund. And I don't know what the fees were, but they were considerably lower. Because he used a mindless approach to investing. You didn't have to pay people saying, hey, this stock's overvalued, this one's undervalued, and pick and choose. Instead, what you'd do is you'd buy everything in the index, and you would try to capture the total market return of that index. Exactly. So all you're doing is making a copycat fund, which mm-hmm. is much cheaper to run, because all you got to do is execute the trades in accordance with the index and then keep your accounting and paperwork and regulatory work all in line. So nowadays, when you buy those sorts of funds, they can be very cheap. In terms of expense fees, they can be like 0.05, you know, a fraction of 1%. So he brought that out. And in his video, he's got a number of videos, even though he just passed away a few years ago. He's very famous in a lot of circles. But he basically advocates that you only need two investments. And there's plenty of ways to argue with this. But he says only two investments. One of the best investors, you know, pretty much all time in the U.S., especially for the little guys, so you can access the market very cheaply. He says you just need total bond, a total bond market index fund, and a total stock market index fund. Then the only choice you have is, and you'd probably have like money market or something too, cash, right? But for your actual long-term investments, you just choose the asset allocation. So do you 60% stocks, 40% bonds, or 80% stocks, 20% bonds, or whatever, how aggressive you want to be. And if one was to do that, you would have incredibly low professional fees. Your only question would be, what's the asset allocation? So we're going to go to a break here, Jerry, and when we come back, we'll continue this discussion.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center provides free, confidential pregnancy tests to any woman in need. But they offer so much more to women, men, and families. By participating in one-on-one parenting classes selected by you, you can take advantage of Earn While You Learn, earning valuable credit to spend on children's items and clothing in Maria's Boutique. The Find Out Free Pregnancy Center. Call 907-455-8255 or visit online findoutfree.com. Findoutfree.com.
Tune in to Shooter's Corner, your source for news and conversation regarding guns, local events, and your Second Amendment rights, with your host, Laura Berkowitz. Sponsored in part by Auto Trim Design, an Alaskan company offering products that help you get the most out of your car or truck. Moose lights, auto starts, bug shields, spray-on bed liners, signs, graphics, and more. Visit Auto Trim Design and listen in every Thursday morning at 11 to Shooter's Corner, right here on KFAR Radio.
Hello, this is Caleb Gibbertoni with Johnson & Associates. Helping injured Alaskans in accidents have taught me a few things. During the springtime, it's nice to see the sun come back. However, having the sun directly in your eyes while you're driving can be a hazard to you and others. Buy a pair of cheap sunglasses to keep in your car and hold it there from the spring through to the fall. At Johnson & Associates, we look out for injured Alaskans. And while we hope you never need us, we're here if you do.
Too much stuff around the house? Have a construction site you want to secure tools and materials while you build? Great news! Independent Rental has your storage solution. We rent brand new 20 and 40 foot storage containers. Store your goods on site here at South Cushman, or we'll bring the container to you. Prices starting at $150 per month. We store vehicles too. Call today. Independent Rental Storage. Safe, secure, affordable.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
Scattered rain showers likely today, otherwise cloudy skies expected. High temperatures reach up to 49, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Chance for scattered rain showers. Lows dip down to about 39. Chance for scattered rain showers again tomorrow. Highs level off around 48. Cloudy skies. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM. And streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Problem Corner with Aaron Lojeski, guest hosting in for David Pruse. We have a caller. Hello, you're on Problem Corner.
Yes. Jerry?
Yes.
This is Cam. I just want to commend you for all the public service you have donated to this community. I don't live in the city, but if I did, I wouldn't worry at all because you're always there and you're always pitching in and making things go the right way.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that a lot, Cam.
Well, well deserved.
That's so, Camp Carlson.
No, don't say it. Okay, goodbye.
Okay, thanks, Cam. All right. Well, our call-in number is 458-8225. We still have a few minutes left in the program, about 10 minutes or so. Jerry, I forget exactly what thought we were in. You know, I didn't sleep much last night, but...
You're on the permanent fund.
I actually want to ask the same question to you that I asked at the ITA forum. So the first thing I did was I kind of queued up the question. I said, hey, what's the long-term rate of return? And they said, Ringstad, Councilman Ringstad said 5.6%. And then the next question I had was, well, what's the withdrawal? So we got that right now. It's about 4.5. So that leaves 1.1% in theory, on average, based off of our previous historical track record, the fund should nominally grow about 1.1%. And obviously, that's not going to be consistent. Some years it may grow a lot. Some years it may shrink a little bit. So the issue I see is 1.1% doesn't keep track with historical inflation rates at all.
No.
Which means the draw rate is not sustainable.
Well, like I say, it was never intended to be inflation-proof. It was supposed to just replace lost funds from the payment in lieu of taxes, the utility system. But the boards, as they've come along, they keep pushing for inflation-proofing it. Now, there is other money going into it. Like I said, when we sell real property, those funds have to go into it. We also receive an annual lease payment on the wastewater and water treatment plants. They pay a lease of somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000. That's new money that goes into it every year. So that is a source on top of the, like you say, the 1-1.5% that historically you're going to get. But no, it's not designed to be inflation-proof like most people think it should be.
I'm going to hold you, the city, your feet to the fire. I think if the plan was to have a permanent fund, you call it a permanent fund, and then you design it to not keep track with inflation, that's a bad design.
But it will continue to grow. It won't grow with the inflation, right? You're absolutely right.
Right, but when my dad was a kid, for those who don't know, my dad's, he's a boomer. He's in his 70s.
Well, that would be me too.
I'm wanting to say he's told me stories about gas being 10 cents a gallon, maybe even 5 cents when he was a kid. And today gas is what, in this area, it's, you know, we have about 450, somewhere around there. And it doesn't mean the value of gas has significantly changed. That's primarily inflation that did that. Okay. So if we think about that, that's what, a 45 times escalation in prices in one lifetime that one person can remember. And if that happens again over the next 50 years or so, 60 years, that $3-4 million draw out of the permanent fund, that might be the wages for one FTE, you know, one full-time equivalent for the city. Imagine it costs the city about $100,000 an employee to pay them, pay their benefits and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, if you multiply that out times 45, we have inflation over the next 50 years like we did over the previous, it's going to cost $4-5 million a year per employee.
You're absolutely right.
But and that draw won't be worth much to the people. It'll be insignificant if that happens.
Its percentage of the budgets each year will continue to decline under your scenario, and that's absolutely right. But the, you know, the city is frozen at the 4.5%, and that is the way it is set up right now until somebody changes it. If you decide to inflation-proof it, you're going to have to dip into that 4.5%. It's going to have to change with time. And that, again, puts a real burden upon city finance to try and guess each year what's going to happen when they do budgeting. The system that is set up right now gives a lot of certainty when the CFO prepares a budget and the administration works on it. Under the other scenario, if you have to inflation-proof each year, you're going back to a system where you don't have that certainty anymore. Yes, it is going to become a smaller part of the budget percentage-wise as years go by.
And eventually insignificant if we continue on existing
trends. I don't know. I don't think of $6 million as being insignificant, but I mean, that's
gas is $50 a gallon.
Well, we're all going to have electric cars by then, right?
So we're told. But but no, I think there is actually, because, you know, when I've been asking these questions, IT forum, I'm trying to get at something. So the Alaska Permanent Fund has historically earned close to 8%.
Mm-hmm.
And your funds earned about 5.6.
Right.
So if you were able to mimic the asset allocation of the permanent fund and get a similar return, you'd have an extra 2.4 points of return. You already have a 1.1 buffer. Yep. So if you add those two together, if you could mimic the permanent fund, now you're at what? Well over 3.5% or so. And that's going to start to get you in the ballpark of actually being sustainable against inflation.
And that's where the focus is now in the discussions, is to be more aggressive on the formula, stipulations that we have on that fund to give us an opportunity to earn more.
So, yeah, I think it would be absolutely interesting if local governments could figure out a way. Actually, the best thing would be just imagine a world where the permanent fund of Alaska said, hey, we're going to kind of act like an in-house mutual fund. We're going to open up ourselves to municipal investors. And if the muni puts their money into the Alaska Permanent Fund, it's a financial product that you can buy, and you basically purchase the return of the permanent fund. Now, obviously, they'd have to put in a different account and keep the money.
You can account for it separately. I don't think it'd be that difficult, but it would be nice to piggyback on that and combine it.
Because that would be interesting, because then the city could consider, rather than working out its own private investment, it could potentially just be like, hey, permanent fund, why don't you, here's $50 million, yeah, go manage it for us.
The Alaska Permanent Fund, you know, invests in a lot of real estate, and that's one area they did well on. As people know, in the long run, real estate is one of the best investments you can make. We don't get into that. I mean, they own malls in the United States, and the malls themselves aren't doing too well. I'm not sure how they're doing there, but in other real estate holdings, I think they've done well. But it's a lot more diverse fund. I mean, years ago, we tried to even open up our fund to commodities, which is something they always like to stay away from. And to this date, we still don't have one penny in commodities. But you need to have these tools available. If interest rates are to drop again, you know, I don't want to see us putting a lot of money in bonds.
When
they drop again. I don't want to see us putting a lot of money on bonds, and there should be a formula that we have is that the lower that goes, the fewer bonds that you buy because you're locked in at that point. And now you have an asset that is essentially losing. It's you're not taking a loss, but you have to report a loss on those funds when you do the true-ups at the end of the year. Because if you were to sell a bond that's only paying 1 or 2% interest, who's going to buy that today? When you can go down to your local bank and get 5, 5.25 now.
Yeah, that's right. So when you buy a bond at a low interest rate and market rates go up, the resale value of that bond declines.
Yep, then you
can still hold it to maturity, but then you're kind of underperforming in your annual rate of return.
And you have unrealized losses.
So the city has to mark to market, and it's accounting for those. Those unrealized losses, or
I think they're showing it as an unrealized loss. Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good that they do that. There's.
But we're not going to realize those losses because you're simply going to hold them until maturity.
They'll hold them until they mature, and then you'll get the cash out of them. So, we got a few more minutes here for the program. Oh, we got a caller. Just a moment. Hello, you are on Problem Corner.
Yeah. Hey, this is Al.
Al, how you doing?
Good. You know, Jerry was saying it's difficult for the budgeting department to do the budget based on the current way we're doing business. But couldn't you just start out with last year's known profits or known dividends and use that as your basis so it's just 1 year behind?
You can. Right now with the 4.5%, it's very easy for us to do the budgeting. I see what you're saying, but right now we have got a system that finance is pretty happy with.
Oh yeah, I don't disagree with that. When Aaron was kind of challenging you, and you said it, what makes it very difficult for the Department of Budgeting to come up with that?
If we came up with an inflation, if the mandate were to inflation proof the fund every year and inflation, like what was a year ago, around 7% nationally or something like that. Well, there would be no money coming to the city from the permanent fund. You'd have to reinvest it. So all of a sudden, you've just shot yourself about a $5, $6 million hole in your budget.
All right.
That's what we're trying to avoid.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, fine.
Well, Jerry, I'm not in any way advocating for annual inflation proof. I'm advocating for long-term inflation proofing, which would be something like this. Imagine you think the long-term inflation rate is 2%, the fund's earning 8%. That would mean that you can't take out more than 6% in the long run. So if you have an off year where you do have a higher inflation rates or the stock market drops or whatever, you're going to have these oddball years where it doesn't work, but then you're also going to have more happy years, up years, where you add value to the fund and you compensate for it. Well, you are listening to KFA Problem Corner. Any final comments, Jerry?
No, just thank you for having us on. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much for joining the program. Have a great afternoon, Fairbanks and North Pole.
Boy, that came on.
News and conversation. KFAR 660 AM Fairbanks. K248DK 97.5 FM Fairbanks. The heartbeat of Alaska.
Another sighting of an escaped killer on Lisa Brady, Fox News. State police in Pennsylvania just confirming that Danilo Cavalcante was spotted yesterday evening, but not found. That led to an expansion of the search area and additional school districts closing as a precaution. He's been on the loose since last Thursday when he escaped from the Chester County prison. Just released video shows him crab walking up a wall and out of sight from the exercise yard.
In the escape of Cavalcante, the tower officer did not observe nor report the escape. The escape was discovered as part of the inmate counts that occurs when inmates come in from the exercise yard.
Acting prison warden Howard Holland says after climbing the wall, Cavalcante ran across a roof and scaled a fence, pushing through two rounds of razor wire along the way. He says he welcomes the state attorney general's investigation of the escape and that security improvements are already underway. A judge grants a speedy